3, 2, 1, hit it.
It's the Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
Now, Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji on KMOX.
What do you know, friends? It is Tuesday, January 28th. Good morning to you. Hope you're doing well. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji, you just heard the lady say it. We want to hear from you today, 314-436-7900. We're streaming on a bunch of platforms like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. You can watch us. We want you to. On Twitter, we are at Chris Amy KMOX. You will find the YouTube feed right there if you want to. And we're streaming with audio on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Leave us a voice message directly from the app.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Mayor Jones last night at what was a town hall, basically, apologized for the poor snow removal response that happened after a couple of snowstorms here in St. Louis recently.
And more executive orders from the Trump White House as the White House orders a freeze on all federal financial assistance.
The Canucks beat the Blues last night 5-2. St. Louis University men's basketball will play tonight against VCU, and that will happen here in St. Louis at 7 o'clock. We will have the broadcast right here on KMOX.
I am sorry that our city services did not meet the mark through our winter storm. I am sorry that it took us too long to pivot and ask for help. But I want to let you know that that's part of being in government. I hear you, we hear you, and we are making the steps to make this better.
That is Mayor Tashara Jones last night, and she did apologize after, what was the grade, B minus?
Well, it was a B minus grade. She gave herself a B minus grade, I will say, with the caveat that that was given in the first few days, I believe, of the snow response.
Sure.
Or, I mean,
well,
she will... We'll give herself a different grade. We'll reassess.
At any rate, that was the mayor who did last night at the STL Activity Center, which is on Arsenal Street. She was there. Alderwoman Kara Spencer was there, taking questions from residents. And she said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what happened here. I don't know how this is going to affect her candidacy. Again, we're still... You know, about a couple of months away from a primary happening and then an election happening. And we talked historically. In fact, we had a bunch of texters and listeners who brought up what happened in Chicago in the late 70s, where there was a snowstorm and guy lost a mayoral race because the city was not prepared for that storm and people were stranded. Granted, that was a much larger scale and a much bigger problem. Will this have the same carryover? That's something we don't know yet, if people are angry enough that they will make their voices heard at the ballot box.
Yeah, we don't know. There's a good chance that it could carry over, partly because there are still little kids, parents, climbing over ice and snow to get to school. Now, how many days has it been? 25 days? It's been a long time since that snowstorm. There are still people who are snowed in as far as their cars go, or especially if you're elderly and don't feel particularly comfortable with the ice. So, yeah, I think the longer that this dragged on, the worse it was for the mayor. The longer trash didn't get picked up, the worse it was for the mayor. And while people do have short memories in general, especially if this were a national election, right, a presidential election, but local elections hit close to home because they affect you. You feel them. You see them every day. So I think that this could be a tipping point.
I still have a lot of doubt about it. I have skepticism about it just because I'm not sure enough people. And granted, a lot of people are and still affected by this, were affected, still are. I'm not sure it's enough to tip the scales in her favor. Again, I mentioned the Chicago thing from the 70s. That crippled an entire city where people couldn't go to work, people couldn't do anything, and it wasn't just isolated to a few neighborhoods here and there. Now, there aren't that many residents in the city of St. Louis in the city limits, so it could be enough to sway opinions. It could be enough to change the vote just enough. And again, let's keep in mind, there aren't a whole lot of people that are probably going to vote in these elections because it's not a general election. It's not a presidential election year. And a lot of people are not motivated to vote in years like this one, where we are just coming off of a presidential election. And there is historically low turnout when it comes to the mayoral race in the city.
And interestingly, remember, I mean, don't forget, they changed the way the city of St. Louis votes back in the last mayoral election, where it is an approval voting system, which means you can vote for all of the candidates if you want. You can vote for as many candidates as you want. Previously, right, and in most other elections, you would choose the one candidate you want to vote for. But with this approval voting system is you can vote for as many candidates as you think will be a good mayor. And the two candidates with the most votes advance to a head-to-head general election. So I don't even know how that system might affect the way votes fall, you know, in this upcoming election.
So March 4th is when that primary happens, and then April 8th is the actual election. It's just a couple of things are going to have to happen here. Mm-hmm. If it's going to affect her in a negative way, it will be momentum. The momentum of anger has to continue. And the other part is there just have to be enough people who are motivated to vote and are pissed off enough still to vote against her.
And
it may not. I'm just skeptical that there are going to be enough people. I'm not saying it won't happen. I just don't know that this is an automatic.
Yeah, I don't know either. And even though, I mean, I've seen some very vocal people, some loud voices on social media saying, when can I vote for Kara Spencer? I'm voting for Kara Spencer. You know, the very online crowd doesn't always represent who's voting on election day. I think what I do want to talk to Hancock and Kelly about this on Friday, just in general, the traditional voting process where you vote for your candidate versus the approval voting system in the city versus ranked choice voting, which is kind of similar. It's like a cousin to the approval voting system, but also still different. And just the pros and cons of all those different types of systems.
I wonder if, and this is just a bigger picture question, and it doesn't really have anything to do with the mayor of St. Louis, but all elections, I know that municipalities can have their own elections and run them the way they want to. States can do different things. We have different rules for different states. I wonder if people, if it would affect turnout, if more people liked the process better. And what I mean is if it were just a more uniform process where this is how every election is done. It's like this, and it happens on this date, and everybody participates on this date, as opposed to, well, we have this election in April of 2025, even though we just had an election in 2024. Where people had to go to the polls.
Hmm.
You know, if everything was more uniformed across the board, across the country, I wonder if more people would participate. My guess is probably not, but I don't know.
If you were voting for mayor on a Tuesday in November, like when you're already there to vote for president, you're going to get more votes.
Right.
For
so
mayor.
I just wonder why you wouldn't do it then.
I mean,
I don't know what the history of the city is in that regard, like why they've decided to do it this way.
I will say this, the ballots could be incredibly long if you put your city, you know, municipal issues on a ballot that would also be federal and state issues. I don't know if it's that. I don't know if there is confusion because it makes sense to me. If you make the very wrong assumption that people will show up to vote, it makes sense. Like, yeah, you could do local in the spring and you can do national in the fall because it's easier to keep track of the issues, what you're voting for. Is this amendment for the city charter, the state? The state constitution or the federal constitution? That could be very confusing. So it makes sense to separate it. But
also you're asking people more than once to go to the polls and make time.
It would have been a lot.
Timeout.
I mean, you would have to be, and I get it, be prepared, but I could see how voting, because remember the different cities, like being in St. Louis County was different than you voting in St. Louis City. And I had different issues that I had to look at the amendment and go and just read it very carefully while I'm voting. Okay, this is a county thing. Now, this is a state thing, right? The propositions versus the amendment. Maybe it would be confusing. I don't know, Ron. I mean,
I almost feel like, you know, when you go to the dentist and they say, oh, you have to get this done, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, come back in 6 months. Like, why can't you just do it now? Just I'm here now. Yeah. Let's knock it out now. Let's take care of it right now. But, you know, they don't do it that way. I wonder if it would make everything better if we could just knock everything out at once.
Yeah. And I think ultimately you try to do the best you can with the systems that you have. But in a country with freedom, you can't make people do things. You can't force people to vote.
Not.
So you have to deal with human nature and you try to set it up in a way. Well, if you're a good actor, you try to set it up in a way that maximizes turnout and a democratic process. If you're a bad actor, you try to abuse the system so that it works in your favor, gerrymandering.
Yeah, you know what? I should run for office just so I can abuse the system to work in my favor.
I'm going to run for office and make it. I'm going to ban. My first executive order will be to ban gumball trees.
Oh, is this about your ankle?
You know what? It's not just about the ankle. The gumball trees are a nuisance to America.
You know what? I saw an old vine last night, and there was one of those vine that went around
from the tree.
No. The vine, like TikTok, but it was you had to get your thing out in like 7 or 8 seconds. Yeah. And there's the one of the kid in the classroom. He says, "I'm just going to say it. I don't care that you broke your elbow." And every time I see it, I think about you and your ankle. Does that mean?
No, it's expected.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. This is KMOX.
You know what? I'm about to say it.
Say it.
I don't care that you broke your elbow.
That's it.
Why?
I would love to know what was going on leading up to that.
I had so many friends with broken elbows, really concentrated in the first and second grade, maybe kindergarten, first, second grade. I felt like that's what you did, is you fell off a table and you broke your elbow, or you climbed the monkey bars and you broke your elbow. And I feel like I really, since first grade, broken elbows, I've not really heard of it.
You said that during the break, or maybe it was right before, why did everybody break their elbows? And I don't remember anybody doing that. There were a lot of broken bones, you know, forearms, wrists, ankles, whatever, you know, legs. But I don't remember an elbow.
When you say broken elbow, I specifically imagine being a child. It takes me back, and I can name the friend, to Elena, my friend Elena, her kitchen in St. Peter's. She had one of those houses that really stands out to me because when you walked in the front door, it was a split level, I guess what it's called. There was just, you walked into a landing and you had to go upstairs.
Up or down, yeah.
Or downstairs. You had to go upstairs to the kitchen and family room or downstairs to the living room.
Right.
And so we walked upstairs to the kitchen and she was explaining how, I don't know, she was on the chair and then on the table and was jumping off the kitchen table or something, playing with her brother, and she broke her elbow. So I just remember childhood broken elbows.
Okay. That seems like a pretty severe injury, to be honest.
I think so, too. I want to say there was one adult, I think, broke her elbow on ice, not recently, but in my adult memory, I know at least one person with a broken elbow. I feel like that would be one of the worst things to break.
Honestly.
Because it's got to go.
That's what it is. Hey, we were talking about the snow removal problems that existed, and I guess for a lot of people still are an issue. And Mayor Jones had an apology last night, as she and Kara Spencer and all those others who were making a run for mayor were addressing a crowd. And we should let you know that Mayor Jones is scheduled to be with us in studio tomorrow at 11 o'clock. So we are going to talk to her about all kinds of stuff. In particular, she wants to talk about, and we want to ask her about, the state probably, it looks like, taking control of St. Louis City Police. among other things, Ram settlement money. Mm-hmm. So all of those issues we are going to talk about with Mayor Jones tomorrow, again, starting at 11 o'clock. Now, as for the city, this is, you know, Amy and I, we exhaust ourselves talking about what downtown St. Louis is and what it could be, what it should be, mm-hmm. and attracting people to it. And there is the vacant AT&T Tower, which is just a couple of blocks from where our station is right now. And there are plans now with a developer, the Goldman Group of Boston. So this is an out-of-town developer that is looking at renovating that building to have about 600 apartment units. Mm. There would be automated parking that happens there. And this is the 44-story tower that you can see from Busch Stadium if you're there, depending on where you are inside at 9th and Chestnut. We have to attract people into the city. One of the things that will make it a vibrant downtown, the first thing, is to attract people to live there. And I was stunned by this. We were looking at the numbers of what the city downtown, specifically downtown, what the population has been historically. And going back to 1990, Amy, I'm surprised by this mm-hmm. because my perception is that the population has been a certain number and continued to decline year by year by year. But downtown, right now, we have about 9,000 people who live downtown St. Louis. In 1990, it was 1,152. In 2000, it was 806.
Mm-hmm.
There were only 800 people living downtown St. Louis 25 years ago.
And just to clarify, because I know sometimes when people in the county say downtown, they're thinking of St. Louis City.
Yeah, we're not Central West End, not Soulard.
Not downtown West.
We're talking.
It doesn't count downtown West.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Downtown. We're talking like where the high rises are.
Market.
Where Busch Stadium is. That is all downtown.
Which is very business district-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, you in a city, you mm-hmm. would think there are more than 800 people that live there at any given time. So it's fascinating to me that in 1990 there were 1,100 people, yet we had a shopping mall downtown.
Well, and that's the thing. That's what I would want to ask. How did these numbers change? Because you said 800 people in 2000.
2000. 25 years ago.
In 2020, the total population is 5,400. 2020, 5,400. Downtown. That's the downtown neighborhood.
In 2010, it jumped to 3,700. In 2020, it was 5,400. And now it's around 9,000.
So I would want to know, like, if you had blocks, like red blocks, blue blocks, yellow blocks, literal, like Legos or building blocks, and each one represented businesses, restaurants, you know, and residents, and you moved them around, how did it shift? Did we lose businesses? And then in some buildings, right, they renovate it, they turn it into residential apartments. Were these apartments or residences empty and then they just got filled up? How did that shift happen? Because we know we've lost businesses, but we've obviously gained residents downtown. How and why? You know, we're looking up, you know, the apartment buildings just outside this building, you know, looking at the dates of when those were built. Important to note, I think One Cardinal Way opened in 2020. So not sure if that was in the census or not.
I feel like it was 2019, 2020, so, somewhere in there.
Right. So that alone would boost the numbers. If you're talking about 800 and then you build One Cardinal Way, boost the numbers.
To be clear, we're not talking units. We're talking people.
Yes.
The number is people.
Right. So I don't know if One Cardinal Way was counted in the census, but something like that can change the numbers dramatically. How many people can that building alone house? And it's sold out or nearly sold out.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly how that number looks, because it's a positive number, sure. It still is like, okay, well, then something's wrong. Because why are businesses leaving? How do we lose the mall? How do we gain 5,000 people but lose the mall? them the mall, not them all. You know, so it's looking at the puzzle pieces and how they shifted. That's really interesting.
That's Amy Markscores. I'm Chris Ranji. Of course, your thoughts are welcome. Always leave us a message from the Audacy app, AUDACY. We would love to hear from you. Also, you can call us or text us, 314-436-7900. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
We were talking about the growth of residents in the downtown neighborhood, downtown St. Louis, and there was a report done by Greater St. Louis, Downtown St. Louis Fiscal Impact Analysis. This was in 2022, and that analysis found that downtown has approximately 10,000 residents, and that this growth, which is a 30% growth from 2010, stands in contrast to the 3% decline in citywide population. Important to note that 1,700 new multifamily housing units were added to downtown since 2010, which is a 24% increase. So increased housing, increased residents. St. Louis Business Journal notes, interestingly, that between 2019 and 2022, the zip codes that make up downtown, the downtown neighborhood, saw a net loss of more than 500 businesses. So losing businesses, but in that time, built more housing units, gained some more residents.
Yeah, we and that's not ideal either, but a lot of businesses have left a lot of downtowns across the country. In particular, work from home has affected much of that. And these businesses say, well, we don't need all this office space because people are working from home, so we will downsize. So a lot of that has happened. But I mean, the bottom line still is we got to get people to want to live down here. That will be the thing that improves a lot, is if we can get people to want to live here. There's this new poll, Amy, the annual Mood of the Nation poll.
Oh, Mood of the Nation.
Don't you love the Mood of the Nation?
Oh, you got to love the mood.
It is
unbelievable. It's like John Hancock.
Oh, I'm in a great mood.
Mood of the Nation.
Conducted by Gallup, and the poll was conducted over about a two-week period right at the beginning of the month before President Trump reassumed office. And one of the biggest findings in this poll is that a record low number of Americans are very satisfied with their personal life. That is
unbelievable.
That is 44%.
So I'm just going to say it because I feel like the juxtaposition of the record low and very. So a record low are very satisfied
right.
with their life.
So fewer people are satisfied with their lives than ever before. The previous low point was back in 2011. Right as we were coming out of the recession, the 2007 to 2009 recession, 46% of people said they were very satisfied with the way things are going in their personal lives. The most satisfied demographics right now, it's what it says, women, Democrats, college grads, frequent churchgoers, those 65 and over, and you're going to be stunned by this one. People making at least $100,000 a year. So you're telling me money doesn't buy happiness unless it's a salary.
Yeah, looking at the range here of people who are very satisfied, high satisfaction with personal life, and looking at the dots furthest to the right, which would be the highest, the number one highest if by party identification is Republicans. The second highest, meaning the dot that goes out the furthest, is those who attend religious services weekly.
But I think this is the most important or the most interesting thing is that people who are satisfied with their personal lives or the fact that Americans, by and large, are satisfied with the way things are going for themselves, they think their lives are better than what the U.S. is doing. They think that their lives are better than how the United States currently is performing, which to me is kind of it's probably not unusual. I'm sure this happens a lot. But to me, it almost doesn't jive because isn't the point that if the country was running well, your life would be improved? And if you feel like your life is doing pretty well, wouldn't that then mean you would think the country is doing well? Most people kind of assess things based on how their lives are going.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everything's fine with me. I got a good salary, got a good, you know, I have everything I need. I have a house. I have this. I have that.
I guess it depends. I mean, they can feel that the country is moving in the right direction, but that for whatever reason, they're struggling in their own lives. Also, I do wonder how the question was asked, how the questions were asked, and how people interpreted them. Do you interpret, are you satisfied with your life, similar to, are you happy?
Well, here are the questions. The personal life question is, in general, are you satisfied or dissatisfied with the way things are going in your personal life / the United States at this time? And this goes from 1979 to 2025. And those who saw or felt that things were going well in the United States, right now the number's at 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Only 20% of people think things are going well. Back in 2019, it was 40%.
Okay, can I ask you a question? Because this is why I
By the way, the personal life numbers are pretty steady going back to 1979. It ranges from like 77% to 88%, and we're right in the middle of that. So it's not like that varies a whole lot, but the variance of how people see the country is it goes from 10% to 70%.
Interesting. Okay, so Matt, you can jump in on this too if you want, and take out the country. I'm going to talk about personal life. If you, Ranj, were, let's say you're a surgeon, successful surgeon, you're making a lot of money, you're doing okay, you belong to the tennis club, you work out a lot, you, you know, can go on vacations. But let's say you're unhappy because you want to be married and you're not married. Or let's say you're unhappy because you're married but you're in a bad relationship. Would you answer this as very satisfied with your personal life, or would you tie in your happiness with the way you answered this question? Because your marriage has nothing to do, right, with the country or how things are going for you as far as finances, health, tennis club, right? But you could say, well, I'm unhappy with my personal life because your personal life involves your marriage. How would you answer that question?
Yeah, it's a good question because it depends on what you, I was looking at this
in a
livelihood sort of way.
More financial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, am I satisfied with my personals? I mean, the you know, do I have a wife? Am I married? Do I have kids, a family that I like or whatever? That, I wasn't even looking at it that way.
Because when you say personal life, I think of family. I don't think, and I do think of financials too, but I would separate those two things.
Well, I also think that there is I made the joke about, you know, you can't buy happiness, you know, money can't buy happiness, but it does alleviate a lot of problems in life.
It does.
It alleviates a lot of concerns.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, you know, if you have a medical issue and you can take care of it financially, you know, you're fine. If you have an emergency and, you know, I've got enough money in the bank, I can take care of it. My house is paid for, whatever. That alleviates so much stress and concern. And I would think that finances are a greater source of stress than anything else, even if you have a marriage that you're not happy in.
Well, and this is, I feel like I'm completely destroying this conversation. Like, no, it's not the point of the conversation. But you could say that, but, because this is a huge but, people who have like chronic health conditions would say, I would trade everything to be
healthy. Oh, of course. Of course.
You know?
Yeah,
So then you're going back to, well,
but also,
how do people define that? Because you could be a millionaire and you could have a terrible marriage, or, you know, someone cheated and you're heartbroken and you're not happy. You know what? I would trade $1 million just to be happy and have a
That's true.
Life.
But a lot of people, Amy, their relationships deteriorate because of financial issues.
Yeah.
That happens to a lot of people, but that it adds so much stress. The arguing happens, the fighting happens. And if you didn't have that financial stress, your relationship at home might be a whole lot better.
I think, yes. And then I think you probably get to a point where you have so much wealth that you start to lose a grip on reality, too, because we've seen all of these, and celebrity messes up with relationships. You see these people who have made it, right? who live the rock star lifestyle or the actress actor lifestyle and just so unhappy and on drugs and have all these issues. I think if you take away the celebrity status and take away the insane amount of money, being in the, so I even say the middle, it's not the middle. You can be pretty high up in the middle. Maybe not having celebrity would help relieve that stress. I think you get to a point where money can add more stress, and it depends on how you made the money. I'm really destroying this conversation.
I'll take the, well, you know, what else is new? I'll take that stress. But I would so welcome the stress of being famous and having.
I don't want to be famous.
Oh,
I want to be.
If the trade-off is this.
Your current life?
But yeah, if it's my current life or to be famous and wealthy, I will take that. Whatever. I'll have a driver. I will have bodyguards. I will go to the damn coffee shop if I want to, but my bodyguards are going to burst their way in and clear you out the way.
Give me anonymity. Give me anonymity, baby.
Wear a hat and glasses. You're fine.
I mean, let me rephrase this. I basically have anonymity, but I'm just saying I don't want to be a celebrity.
A lot of doors open for you when you're a celeb.
What if you don't want to just be...
Your money's no good here, even though you have lots and lots of it?
Would you choose celebrity and wealthy or anonymous and wealthy? Anonymous and wealthy is the way to go.
Yeah, probably anonymous and wealthy.
You can pay for those doors.
Oh, I know this. Is Missouri one of the states that if you
now
win the
is,
lottery...
Now it is, baby. Yeah, now okay. It is, as of a couple years ago.
Okay, if I win the Powerball and it's like $1 billion, I will disappear and you will have no idea why.
No, 100%.
Yep.
I'm gonna have to disappear.
I can't imagine anybody, Amy, would win the lottery and say, yeah, tell everybody I won. Yes, let me do the press conference with the big check.
No.
No way. Wouldn't want anybody to
know
that I had that cash.
You're going to see a brand sparkling new Outback with some fancy rims on it, and you're going to be like, Amy is doing pretty well for herself.
If I win the billion...
Will you buy me an Outback?
I'm going to buy all the Outbacks so you can't have one. I'm going to buy all the Outbacks, and I'm going to pay for parking in a garage for all the Outbacks.
There's going to be a lot of ladies
and you won't be able to go there.
A lot of ladies who don't want to date you are going to be really mad at you.
Oh, they'll want a date. You want an Outback? You want to go out? I'll give you an Outback.
Sorry, Outback Steakhouse is what I meant. That's what I meant. Sorry.
We're talking about the Subaru. I know. But I'll buy all the Outback Steakhouses, too, while I'm at it. You can't stop me. I got $1 billion. Did you see this next on KMOX?
The new era of Starbucks is here.
Okay.
Ranji. So... with the new CEO, Brian Nichols' plan to turn around Starbucks declining
fewer
sales.
Deals and whatnot.
Well, yeah, allegedly we're declining premium. Sales. I don't know how that's true. Then maybe they just opened too many stores. I'm not sure. At any rate, he is trying to re-cozify Starbucks. He's trying to make Starbucks cozy again. And after pushing for drive-thrus, now Starbucks wants people to stay and wants people to linger. Now remember, they did close the free bathroom rule, so you do have to buy something to just sit there and use the bathroom. But baristas are now instructed to, quote, warmly engage with customers and always ask if they're staying or leaving. In-store sippers will get ceramic mugs, and to actually tell you, like, this is real, this happened to a friend yesterday who went to Starbucks and said, I got a ceramic mug. I didn't ask for one, but they said, are you guys going to sit here? And he said, yeah, we're going to sit. Huh. And normally, like, even if you were going to sit for a few minutes, you get the takeaway. You get the takeaway mug. But that they gave him a mug, and he's like, oh, now I have to sit here and drink all of it.
This is stupid, right? And the reason it's stupid is there are a bunch of coffee shops already like that. When you go to Starbucks, you're going for convenience.
Quick.
It's quick.
Snappy.
And there are a million of them. You cannot consider yourself premium when you have two Starbucks within a block of each other. You just can't. Mm. And there are so many locations around the country where there are two Starbucks within a matter of a walking distance of minutes. There are way too many. Yeah. Like, there's one, and then there's one across the street and the building across the street. You're not premium. You're a McDonald's for coffee.
They can ask. I have no problem with them saying, would you like a mug or a takeaway cup? And And then you just answer, right? Because I always get a takeaway. Now, I do have friends who like the mugs, but they do that. They don't go to Starbucks. They're anti-Starbucks. They
right.
go to Shaw.
Right. The people who want those are going to go to Shaw
yeah.
or Caldi's or whatever.
Yeah.
One of the local coffee places.
And like I said, you're supposed to linger, but you can't use the restroom, get free water, or just hang out without buying something.
The Super
Which that is fair. That's fair.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. The Super Bowl is about a week and a half away. Little over a week and a half away. It'll be the Chiefs and the Eagles. And one thing that many people love and maybe love most about the Super Bowl is the commercial breaks. All of them.
Yeah.
So coming up, there will be an Angel Soft. You know what Angel Soft is?
Toilet paper?
Yeah, the poo-poo paper.
Yep.
So the Angel Soft bathroom tissue company has bought a 30-second ad that is going to run just before they cut to halftime. And the game, of course, is on February 19th. The purpose of their ad, though, is to invite people at that very moment to go take a pee-pee break.
So
instead of watching the ad,
what do they show on the ad?
There's going to be this cartoon angel who is, if I have this right, the little angel is going to tell you it's okay right now to go to the bathroom, take your potty break, yeah. and there's going to be a countdown.
You know who's getting screwed over by this is the next commercial.
The next commercial
No
break.
One's getting in and out in 30 seconds, especially if you have to wait.
30 seconds is not enough time for the bathroom.
No, you can pee for 30 seconds.
You can't wash your hands.
You have to wash your hands for 20.
Right.
That means whoever bought the ad after this Angel Soft commercial.
Getting screwed.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I wonder if they know whose ad is next.
It's probably Charmin.
Wouldn't that be great?
Mm-hmm.
I love a good toilet paper war.
We don't have enough toilet paper wars.
We don't. Everyone's fighting in this world except for the toilet paper people.
We don't have cola wars anymore. We don't have that. We got a lot of drug wars. We don't have any TP wars.
Pepsi Coca-Cola war was pretty strong
that was fun.
In the 90s.
Did I tell you, maybe we've talked about this before, but when I was a kid, I liked Michael Jackson so much, like every kid did at the time. Yeah. Turns out he liked kids, too.
Okay,
but
come on.
He never grew up as an adult. I became a Pepsi fan because of Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Because he was in all the Pepsi commercials. And I was like 7 or whatever.
Wasn't that when his hair caught
yeah,
on fire?
Yeah. There was shooting a commercial and his hair caught fire. Yeah, that did happen.
Mm.
But that's a weird way to... It works for kids. You know, it works. If you're young, you're impressionable.
Yeah.
He was, you know, the king of pop. Everybody loved Michael Jackson. Yeah. So I liked Pepsi because of him.
Well, that's cool. I liked Pepsi growing up more than Coke. Coke was a little strong for me.
Yeah, Pepsi is a little sweeter.
It's a little sweeter. It's not quite as acidic. You can't run your car on Pepsi.
It's much better for the child's. But it's not good for you. Soda's not good for you. Mm-mm. But it's okay as a treat every now and then.
Thank you for that PSA. Everyone listening, it's okay as a treat. Oh, okay. Chris Rogers.
I would not drink soda day, every day. I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
It'd be very bad. Do you know what season it is?
Yeah, it's tax season, okay? It's the worst season in the history of the world.
Amy and I are going to do your taxes for you when we come back on KMOX.